Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show.
Hey, hey, everyone, and welcome back to the Employee Cycle Podcast. I'm your host, Bruce Marable, co-founder and CEO of Employee Cycle. And you know us, we are your friendly HR analytics dashboard. That's right. All of you HR and people ops leaders out there, we know you're pulling spreadsheets from all those different HR systems you're using, your HRIS, ATS, engagement, performance systems, Glassdoor, all these systems to try to tell a data-driven story. Yet a lot of you don't have the time, skill set, or resources. And it ends up just being a messy, crappy, manual spreadsheet dashboard that you might not be that proud of. Well, look no further, because we have Employee Cycle to the rescue, which helps you pull all your data from all your different systems into one real-time, beautiful, centralized HR dashboard. Go to employeecycle.com to check it out. But that's enough about me and our company, because today I am very happy to announce that we have a great guest, and his name is Chisholm Agata. He's the director of HR at Verkada. That's a tongue twister there. And today he's joining us to talk about HR in the tech space. Chisholm, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Bruce. This is awesome. I'm excited to talk to you about HR in the tech space and just kind of what I've seen from my experiences in this area so far.
Awesome. And I'm super honored and thrilled because this is your very first podcast as well.
So that is true.
This makes it even more super special.
Yes.
So I would love to start this podcast off the same way we always do, which is having you tell all of us how you ended up in the wonderful world of HR.
Yeah, it's an unconventional path into HR for sure. But I actually went to school for mechanical engineering, studied that, graduated with that degree, and actually worked in the oil and gas industry as a design engineer for a few years. I had the opportunity to move into a university recruiting lead role on the tech side, and decided to just, you know, spread my wings a little bit and see what that looked like. If it didn't work out too well, I could always just jump back into engineering. But I realized as soon as I got into that space, everything involving looking at talent, assessing talent, bringing people into the company just kind of lit a fire in me. And I realized that I did not want to go back into engineering. I wanted to, you know, further explore this recruiting space and see what it could lead to. So from recruiting, I ended up moving into program management within the HR function. And that was specifically looking at learning and development, curriculum, working with our competency and development teams, and really refining classes, courses, and content for an engineering population to ensure that they were continuing to grow and advance in their careers. This later took the form of helping create career development programs as well. So I just realized that even though I was moving away from engineering, I could still work closely with engineers and still use sort of my technical background to help engineers out. And then I moved into my first kind of HR business partner proper role, supporting a large engineering function. And I found that this role was just kind of the sweet spot I was looking for. It was a little bit of partnering with the business. It was coaching and, you know, helping the business out. It also had a technical component where we were creating programs. I was looking at data. I was getting to analyze data and make decisions off of that. And once I got into that role, I just knew that, you know, HR is the place for me, that I found a place where I can be a people person and still be quite technical. And I haven't looked back since. And now I'm leading HR at Verkada as we go through hyper growth and helping scale this company, scale the HR function, and you know, help us be successful. And it's a great feeling.
And I'm sure the HR community is much better now that you decided to ditch the engineering path and stay with helping people.
You know, I think so. I think so.
And could you just tell us a little bit about Verkada in regards to what the company does, stage, employee headcount, and anything else that you think is interesting?
Yeah. So Verkada is an enterprise security company. And like when you say enterprise security, it sounds extremely boring, but the company is anything but boring. We operate in a space where I feel that has been often neglected, where enterprise security, whether it be cameras, access controls, whatever it is, has not seen a large amount of innovation since it's come out. So what Verkada does is basically bring this industry that maybe has felt like it's been stuck in the 90s to modern day, modernizing the tech, using cloud solutions, powering it with AI, with machine learning, to make sure that we're building an enterprise security system that customers in the 20th, 21st century are looking for and that they've been actively seeking. So the company has been 2.5 years old, 3 years old now. I joined about 11 months ago, and we've tripled our headcount since then. So we're close to 300 employees now. And we actually just announced our Series C round last week. So we're now valued at close to $1.5 billion unicorn company. So there's obviously a need for our product. And I think our investors see the long runway that we have as a company.
Awesome. So what I would like to do is to structure this interview in a few parts. One, to just briefly discuss what it's like working in HR or people operations in the tech space and how that potentially differs, whether it's a startup or a more scalable and mature company. Then we'll go into what do you believe the differences are working in HR in the tech space versus non-tech. Next, I would like to go into what have you learned in regards to working in this fast-paced, hyper-growth world, and then we can go into what can HR do to improve the reputation and culture in the tech space. Sound good?
Okay. Yeah, that sounds great.
All right, so let's start off with how is it, what is it like working in HR and people ops in the tech space? Like what makes it more interesting, less interesting? What really gets you going and up in the morning to work in HR at a tech company?
Yeah, I think it's a couple things. Like there's one is like the age of the company. So you'll find like a lot of companies that maybe have been around for a long time will see HR more as process and compliance, whereas companies that are a lot younger might view HR as people who are coming in and really partnering with the business, not focusing so much on compliance, though that is an aspect of the role, but really partnering, coaching, and driving business decisions and helping leaders make business decisions that are impacting humans. Because at the end of the day, the people in the company are the most valuable resource within the company. So it's important that we take care of them, make sure that we're looking after our top performers, that folks who aren't doing well, we're looking at ways to turn that performance around, and just anything that touches how humans operate within the company. So one, age of the company. Second thing that really stands out to me is just the need for data and the need for understanding data within a tech company. The tech companies, whatever the product is, they're dealing with lots of data every day through their product. And that's no different from what we see on the HR space, whether it's hiring data, whether it's attrition, whether it's just like maintaining your HRIS and making sure it's robust and the data is consistent and can act as a single source of truth. Every day we are bombarded with a ton of data, and just being able to like to sift through it, have tools that sift through it and ask the right questions so that you're pulling the right information and can make decisions and drive solutions from that is also very key. So I think within the tech space, you're faced with that on a day-to-day basis, and just being able to critically think through things, having the right people around you that you can bounce ideas off of, and just hiring folks with skills that are wanting to sink their teeth into that data really, really kind of comes to light in the tech industry.
A lot of people listening to this series are in two buckets. One, they either are really excited about the potential opportunity of working in the tech space as an HR professional, or they are a brand new HR person at a tech company. And so I think it would be really interesting if you could provide some insight around what are the skill sets needed to really be successful as an HR person in the tech space? I mean, how adaptable do you need to be? It seems as though there's so many things that are happening so fast, so quickly, and you almost need to be like jack of all trades, master of none. What does that look like?
I feel like that what you just said is pretty spot on. Again, depending on the size of the company, HR is asked to play many different roles. So being able to adapt to different situations, being able to context switch. So oftentimes you might find yourself having a discussion with a VP of engineering about compensation benchmarking, and then 30 minutes later, you are talking to the head of sales about performance improvement plans, and then you're having lunch with the CEO talking about what you're doing for onboarding. So you need someone who's not only adaptable, but able to maybe store lots of information and be able to just pull it out on recall when necessary to actively help or inform whoever that you're talking with. So there's that element of context switching there too. There's also a sense of you can't be scared of things when you're in this HR space. Like, and by that I mean there's going to be a lot of challenges. There's going to be a lot of things that come up that maybe you haven't really seen before or dealt with. There's situations that are so unique to like maybe you and your company, me and my company, that there are not often a lot of people who can relate to it. So just being able to kind of take a step back, look at the situation, and then just zero in on what is the issue here, and trusting your gut. That's something that develops over time, but that's something that's very key to HR at smaller tech companies, because there's not a lot of people around who have experienced the same exact thing that you're going through.
When you're working in HR at a smaller tech company, do you feel that more oftentimes than not, you're actually driving the entire workforce strategy? Is the CEO still driving a lot of that, or is it more of a partnership?
And so that will depend on the company. I think most companies that are growing, once they bring in HR, it's because they recognize at some level that HR will provide value. I think it's up to the HR individual coming in to kind of showcase what that value is and seek that clarity from the CEO or whoever before jumping into the role so that they know what they're getting themselves into. I'll say that for my situation and for places where I've worked in the past, HR is seen as that trusted partner where we're not making decisions on behalf of the business, but the business is including us in their decision-making, whether it's how are we going to structure this organization? What are ways that we can incentivize our top performers so that they're staying longer? You know, things like that. Like those decisions are not made in a vacuum anymore. They include HR because business strategy is people strategy at a very high level. So you need to understand all these facets, and having HR in the room, we really bring in that insight about the people and help inform the decision making.
That leads me to my next section of questions around what do you think are the actual and also perceived differences of working in HR, whether you're in a tech space or non-tech space, especially if you're in blue collar or more traditional businesses. And it's interesting, the thing that actually teed up this section is when you said the companies you've worked in, which seem to be primarily tech, it was more of a strategic business partner, whereas a lot of HR leaders still feel like they're the redheaded stepchild. They don't get budget. They don't have the seat at the table. I don't even know if that's a term that people even use anymore, but I still see it around. So what do you think are the main differences being in tech versus not being in tech while working in HR?
Being in tech, as an HR professional, you're expected to that dynamicism that you bring to the job, that adaptability lent itself very well to a lot of the issues that are being tackled in the tech space. So one of the top things that every tech company talks about and is figuring out how to do better is diversity and inclusion, for example. So with that, it's not just hiring and bringing in more diverse talent. You're looking at what are the programs that we're building internally to ensure that diverse talent feels included and wants to stay and continue to build on the D&I efforts within the company. We're looking at what are the schools that we're going to as a recruiting function? How are we casting a wider net to ensure that we are getting the best and the brightest out there? Oftentimes, it's you're being asked to jump into each of those areas and provide insight, provide expertise, and that's what makes the HR professional feel like that trusted partner. I know that example kind of just spoke to recruiting, but there's numerous examples of jumping into the business and helping them with issues too. But I found that at non-tech companies or companies that, you know, have been around for 30, 40, 50 plus years, if they haven't started trying to rebrand their HR organization into being that strategic partner, it's something that is definitely on their roadmap of things to do, because you'll find that you need to have someone who is invested and focused on how do we get the most out of our people in order to allow the business to make the right decisions that aren't just looking out for, yes, the revenue of the company or the bottom line, but ultimately, how is the talent that you're bringing in? How are they operating? How are they enjoying their experience within the company? What are they saying about the company? What's the external brand due to how the folks in your company, like how they're operating? And just having someone who can give some insight into all of that. So I do think that any company who does not have their HR function strategically poised as a business partner is looking to reform that function so that it can be seen more as a business partner and less as a tactical administrative function or purely compliance function.
One of the things that I've seen personally working with a lot of different HR and people ops leaders with our dashboard product is the difference in title. So a lot of the times in the tech space, you'll see this title with the word people in it. So chief people officer, people operations manager, director of people ops. And then a lot of times you'll see more often than not in the non-tech space, you'll still see a lot of CHRO. You know, I can't remember the last time I actually saw a CHRO title at a tech company, which is interesting. But to even make it a little bit more complicated, you also have a director of HR title. So two-part question, what's the real difference between HR and people operations? And two, with you working at a tech company in HR, what was the decision around still having a title with the word HR in it?
Oh, yeah, that's actually a very interesting question. And I've noticed this and, you know, thought about it a little bit. And I think it ultimately comes down to just, it's at the end of the day, it's just a title. There are often companies that have that chief people officer role, but it doesn't change the actual inner workings of the day-to-day job. I think the move to people is to help kind of rebrand and reshape the view on HR so that people, when they see that title or when they see that org within the company, they're immediately looking at it with, this organization is for people. They are here to help people, versus, I guess, quote unquote, human resources, where when you say people are a resource, it almost kind of comes off as people are just a tool here, a tool or a cog or something within this machine. So I do think it's just a shift to push how people view the human resources role. But at the end of the day, the title is the only thing that's different. The expectations, the output, the scope of the roles are the same. So for myself, I didn't really put too much emphasis on the title, whether it's director of HR, you know, director of people, head of people, whatever it is. I know that coming into a company and being the first HR hire, my job not only is to grow the HR function, but also to grow how the company perceives HR. So if I want HR to be seen as a more human function where people know that, yes, they're there to, you know, maybe build out process and policy and things like that, but I also want HR to be seen as a place where employees feel safe to come to talk to their business partner, to feel like they do have someone who can be an advocate for them, who can push for fairness and for equality, then regardless of what my title is, it's up to me to build out what that perception is and make sure that I'm setting that example for the workforce. So yeah, I don't pay too much mind to the titles, but I do think it is it's a branding shift, so that when people see that, they immediately think of this organization is here to help people rather than viewing it is just like a resource.
Thanks for sharing that. So now I would like to dig into what are some of the things that you've learned as an HR person, specifically in the tech space. Are there things that you've seen around rapid growth or funding, venture capital, the way that engineering teams work versus sales teams? Are there any interesting insights that you think you will find working in tech as an HR person versus not working in tech?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think there's a few things here that for me, one of the biggest things that I've learned or observed is just how culture grows, and where culture comes from. So when people think HR, they think, you know, HR is responsible for really creating the culture of the company, for generating, you know, what that culture is and what that message is. But I often have seen that, you know, culture comes from your exec team, from your CEO, from your leadership team. HR is definitely part of that, but it's mostly HR's role to help advise and enforce that culture that the leadership team wants. If there's something that needs to change, HR will come in. We'll talk with our CEO. We'll talk with the leadership. We'll, you know, do engagement surveys and understand what it is that needs to change. But it's not specifically the role of HR, at least in my opinion, to be out there influencing and pushing a culture if it doesn't match what the leadership team is looking for. So that's the one of the big takeaways. Another one, I think it's interesting that you mentioned this, is just like the difference between engineering and sales. And this ties into culture too, is just to make sure that every team feels like it has its own identity. You want, whether it's recruiting efforts or anything like that, you just want, if your engineering team is great at what it does, but they feel like they're in the shadows because, you know, the company is, you know, sales heavier, is marketing heavier, things like that. You want to make sure that you're working with your leaders in the engineering space to really emphasize and create a culture for engineering so that they feel like there's an identity there. You don't want to get into a situation where you're forcing people to downplay a culture if it's successful for them. So you're looking at ways that you are amplifying or helping teams amplify their culture and their identity. Yeah, there's just a lot of learnings here, but a lot of it just comes from, you just got to be adaptable and flexible to the challenges of the day. There are numerous situations that I've come across where when I reach out into my network, many people may not have dealt with hypergrowth in the same way that I'm dealing with it now, or have experienced it in that way. But just being open to that outside mentorship has been key to my own growth in this space, because I'm able to crowdsource from a number of people who have been in a similar position and who have seen their companies grow, who have, you know, taken their companies public and things like that, and really just leverage their insights and find a way to adapt it to what it is that I'm doing here at Bricada and to see what works here at Bricada. Yeah, so I think those are the three, like the big three for me. There's a lot of different learnings in there too. I could talk about them for a while, but those three stand out to me the most right now.
Awesome. That was pretty interesting. And then I would also like to ask you, what do you think HR can do, and what do you think is HR's responsibility to help improve and change some of the negative perceptions of working in tech? There's a lot of stigma around tech not paying women as much as men, or not being as diverse, and just a lot of other things. So I'm not, you know, having rampant toxicity and employer relations issues. So how do you think HR, and do you think HR should play a major role in looking to change the stigma around the industry?
Yeah, I do think that is one of the responsibilities that HR has. It's not fun when you are in a function that people generally just feel is negative, and, you know, if someone says like, oh, HR at my last company wasn't good, I didn't even know who my HR person was, I don't know what they did. Whenever I hear something like that, you know, that's like a pain in my heart, because I know that there's a lot of HR professionals out there, you know, who are making it a point to be out in their business, to be seen, and make sure that there is influence, that their influence is being felt. But But yeah, that is a responsibility of HR, and that all comes from being embedded in the business. You need to hire for your blind spots. So if, for example, I'm not great at compliance, I need to hire someone who is good at compliance or even awesome at compliance, so that as we're navigating the different issues and the different complexities of the role, I have someone who's knowledgeable in a particular area that I can bounce ideas off of, and they can actually advise and help create policy that will shape the company and move it in a direction that it needs to go in. So whether that's being boots on the ground, meeting with as many employees as you can and understanding employee sentiment so you can bubble that up to the exact team and they can use that to help make decisions, whether that's being available to just be a sounding board for an employee who is maybe disgruntled or who's experiencing something, or for managers who are going through tough challenges with their employees. I think HR needs to be there in a large capacity to get this information. And then that's where the data processing comes in. It's like, understand what to do with that information. So if there are reports within your company of, you know, toxic culture, or there's a sense that women are not getting paid as much as men, you know, anything like that, like HR should investigate that, like pull the data, see if it's true. And if it is, then work with the business leaders to make the adjustments necessary so that it now becomes a fair and equal place again. We're privy to a lot of information, and what we do with that information, the questions that we ask with that information, I think ultimately make you a good HR professional or someone who's, you know, just kind of turning a blind eye to different things. So it is a responsibility. We are given a lot of information. We are given a lot of access, and knowing what to do with that is what I feel makes someone a great HR business partner, a great HR leader, great counsel for the leadership.
I appreciate such a thorough response to that, and I'm sure that will resonate with a lot of our listeners. So now we're going to move to my favorite part of the podcast, which I like to call the real, the random, and the ridiculous. Are you ready?
All right. Let's hear it.
All right. The real question. Do you like to eat bread pudding? And if so, how do you like it made?
Do I like to eat bread pudding?
Yes. It's a very real question.
I am not a fan of pudding. The texture puts me off.
Oh, Chisholm.
I know.
We were doing so well in this interview.
I know. Oh, you have to pick bread pudding.
You know what? I'm going to act like I didn't even hear that answer.
But all right, I just haven't had good bread pudding, you know?
Right. Next time I'm on the West Coast, I'm going to make sure. We're going to have to find a great bread pudding place, because this... I just can't you keep living your life like this. It's just not fair to you.
Thank you.
All right. The random question. Before we started the interview, you were telling me about your Peloton. And so randomly, I would like to know, who is your favorite Peloton trainer?
Jess. She brings a lot of energy. She always has really solid music. And, you know, I feel like I always PR or do my best when I'm in her classes. So I'm always in her classes.
Nice. And then the ridiculous question.
Okay.
What do you think, if you have any to share at all, is a ridiculous perception that people have when they want to work in tech and have never worked in tech before?
Man. Oh, this is a good and ridiculous question. let's see. I think the perception, it might be that when people come in, they just expect everywhere to look and feel like a Google or Facebook that has every single resource imaginable. You have processes created, you have snacks galore, and, you know, chocolate fountains coming through the roof and all this kind of stuff. Oftentimes, like, that's not the case. If a company has a good amount of funding and money, then that can happen. But you join tech, you join startups for that scrappiness to be able to create something that's long-lasting and impactful, and less so for the perks. But I do think a lot of people in their first time entering tech feel like those perks are just there and ready to be jumped into.
Chisholm, you have been such an awesome, awesome podcast guest. Thank you. Chisholm!
Thank you, Bruce. Thank you. This was amazing. Thanks for having me.
Oh, no problem. You did a great job, especially with this being your first one. So where can people find you and Verkada online?
You can find Verkada at www.verkada.com. Our awesome marketing team has really spent some good time on our website, so it'll tell you a lot about our product, who we are, what we do, who our clients are. You can find me on LinkedIn, Chisholm Agata. Feel free to connect, send messages if you ever have questions or anything like that. I'm always looking and willing to assist anyone.
Also, if you're in the area, you can get to Chisholm before I can. Please put him on to the best bread pudding you can find to change his life.
I really need to look and find a good spot now.
You do. But thanks again for being such an awesome podcast guest. And the information that you shared in regards to the website for your company and your LinkedIn, we will definitely have in the show notes. So all you listeners, if you enjoyed this episode and had much fun listening as we did making this happen, then please leave us a 5-star rating, because that shows that we're providing educational and entertaining content, which is the only reason why we're doing this. And so please share, because we always want to get better if you think there are ways we can do so. Also, if this was the first time that you've ever listened to the Employee Cycle podcast, and that was because you're either already a super fan of Chisholm and just wanted to hear whatever he had to say, or you think this topic is so great, but now you're looking for other awesome podcasts, well, please subscribe to the Employee Cycle podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening to great podcasts. And HR and people leaders out there, please remember to always hire, train, and retain the best workforce possible. Thanks. Later, kids.
This episode of the Employee Cycle podcast was edited and produced by Lux Podcast Production. Lux is a creative audio suite that helps clients create, market, and measure their show. Visit luxpodcasts.com to learn how a podcast can benefit your organization. That's LUXEpodcasts.com.